Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the Geek Cave. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
And it's movie time!
It's movie sign! Yes, it is the movie section, and I gotta admit, Justin, I forgot to poke holes in that box that you brought in.
What box?
Oh no!
Oh, is it still on the deck?
Oh man!
We had an interview, or we were supposed to have an interview. They were supposed to be coming. Then again, UPS was supposed to deliver it to Darren. Darren,
son
did you?
Okay, we might have a bigger problem.
We might,
because I, in addition with that interview, I also ordered a honey badger.
Oh no!
And I think I selected, group my packages into as few boxes as possible.
What have you done?
Darren, yeah. you probably better go check this right now.
Yes, please.
Go interview for us and apologize.
And tell me if the honey badger's okay.
Oh, the honey badger's going to be fine.
He might have gotten cold. You don't know.
Honey badger's cold. Bring him in.
says there's a note that I should call this number. I guess he got bored and left. So, let me just dial up here. And we want to welcome in right now Randall Lobb. He is one of the writers and directors for Power of Grayskull. This is a new project that is underway. It's on Kickstarter right now. We've got a link on our site at geekcavepodcast.com. And you may remember him from our interview about Turtle Power, that documentary as well. So, hey, thanks for coming back on.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. It's very kind. I guess I didn't wreck you off when I was here the first time.
Yeah, we liked you so much. We brought you back, and, We're big He-Man fans around here. Two-thirds of the hosts have small children, and both of them are being introduced to He-Man and She-Ra and all of the 80s properties that we grew up with. So,
sort of like chickenpox. You expose them early.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to get to the new stuff. You got to work your way through the things that we worked our way through.
That's right. You got to figure out where you came from to know where you are.
Exactly. So, Power of Grayskull, you guys have a Kickstarter up and running. It's supposed to be the what you guys call the most definitive documentary on everything involving He-Man. So can you, I guess, give us a little bit of details on what exactly you guys are trying to do?
Yeah, so when we put out Turtle Power, I mean, I'm sure you heard and remember very well the story, how long it took us to get Turtle Power made.
Yeah.
And it was incredible in terms of process and the amount of learning that went on. And really, I would say after the movie came out, there was a moment where people would, and I don't know if it was specifically your interview, but one of the interviews, somebody said to me, What is the best part? Like, it must be the best part for you that you're finally done, and now here you are, and people are able to get it and all this. And somebody then said, yeah, and you get paid or whatever, right? And I said, actually, no, the best part for me is making it. And it's kind of this feeling after Turtle Power comes out that, oh, my God, I don't know. Like, I need another one, you know? We need to do this again. We can't, everything we learned, everything we know, all the material that we amassed with Turtles was more than just what the Turtle movie was. It was a way of doing something. And that way of doing something, we decided we would call the definitive history of the definitive film. And some people said, you know, man, it's not definitive because you missed this fact or, you know, this element of the story. And I said, no. The definitive approach is not necessarily have everything, although we actually did have everything on Turtles, just couldn't use it in the final. But it was an approach, a way of digging deep and pulling out the human stories and going for the bones. So we jumped right into the history of Conan the Barbarian. And that project was called A Riddle of Steel, The Definitive History of Conan the Barbarian. And you might think, what does that have to do with He-Man? But there are a lot of He-Man fans that know exactly what I'm about to say. As you dig into Conan, you know, you get into the Conan archives and you pull out some interesting data, and we found an agreement between Mattel and Conan Properties International, where Mattel was basically saying, hey, we can't make Conan action figures for kids. Conan's rated R.
Right.
And, you know, and you could see the email coming back then, snail mail, coming back from Conan Properties International saying, well, yeah, John Milius is going to make this movie. And of course, that's super tough movie, and John Milius is not a very, I guess you wouldn't call him a children's filmmaker at the time.
No.
And so Mattel had to do something. There was something that they wanted to do, and basically it's a barbarian character. But they'd also come out of interviews and meetings about Star Wars, and Kenner picked up Star Wars. So what they did is, I think they looked for a sweet spot between some of the stuff that was cool about Star Wars and some of the stuff that was cool about Conan. And in reading about that and finding out about it, our DP, Isaac Elliott Fisher, cinematographer, he got really excited because he's a huge He-Man fan, and he was also the huge Turtle fan. Now, my other partner, Mark Hussey, and I, we're older, and He-Man and the Turtles both were franchises that I was interested in from the outside in, whereas Isaac was interested from the inside out. Again, that's part of this definitive approach.
Okay.
And so I said, well, you know what? Let's leave He-Man for now. We're working on Conan. Well, then we had cause to interview Gary Goddard at his office. And in his office is a great big He-Man, the Masters of the Universe movie poster. He wrote and directed the 87 movie. Now, I know he directed it. I think he wrote it. And someone's going to correct me on that, but I don't have my notes in front of me, so I'm going to apologize up front. But he directed it, certainly, and he was involved in it heavily. And Isaac looked at that, and all of a sudden he went, what? Oh, no, I can't believe it. You know, there's a second He-Man thing.
Right.
Within this week's time. And then at the end of the 2 or 3 week period we're shooting, we end up at Bill Stout's, artist William Stout, and we're in his studio, and he starts talking about He-Man. And I turn to Isaac and Mark, and I say, okay, three times, the universe is telling us something.
Right.
So it was in our heads. Now, not long after that, Rob McCallum, director and writer of Nintendo West, he reached out to Isaac and they were chatting. Rob turned out to really enjoy Turtle Power. He liked our approach. He liked what we did. And he was asking a lot of questions. And he mentioned something about He-Man. And I guess Isaac said, oh, here's a fellow fan. And Isaac and Rob got chatting. And then next thing you know, we said, well, why don't we see if we can make it with Rob? And sure enough, we got talking back and forth. We decided it would be a lot of fun, and it would be good for us to bring another filmmaker in for this project because we were deep into some other ones, right?
Yeah.
So Rob came in, and we hit it off pretty well. And this particular project, we decided to try with a Kickstarter approach because Rob knew that approach. And that was new to us, and that's one of the great reasons we wanted to deal with Rob and work with him, because he really has this hands on the ground, I guess you'd say feet on the ground, maybe he does handsprings or cartwheels, but he's close to the fan movement, you know, he's up there with Nintendo Quest showing, you know, film screenings in different cities, so we really liked where he was coming from, and it was perfect in terms of timing, too. Because there's a slowdown with Conan. So there we start to do some work together, and you never know how that's going to go. At Christmas, we shot that teaser that you see at the Kickstarter site, and it was a really nice process working with Rob, and we shot that little thing where he and I are talking at the Kickstarter appeal video, and it's been really good. He's got a different aesthetic from us, which is nice, because that really fits into our system very well. So it's been good working with him. And he's a very serious and hardcore He-Man fan, so that's good for Isaac. So Isaac isn't just dealing with Mark and myself who come at it from that outside perspective. They can geek out together and come come back at us and, you know, present us with, here's what the fans know, here's what the fans like, as we learn, you know, about the franchise from talking to so many people. Boy, I didn't allow you any cuts there, did I? I went straight at it.
No, that's it's actually a small world, because we've had Rob on when Nintendo Quest came out. So it was just kind of interesting to see the two of you coming together on this project. Obviously, you're looking at different time frames, different incarnations of He-Man. You've got the Filmation, you've got the one that was in like the mid-2000s, the New Adventures of He-Man, which was kind of short-lived in the 90s. That one had a really sci-fi bent to it. As you're going through all of these different versions of the character, did you guys happen to notice, or have you noticed yet, any kind of common threads outside of the He-Man punches Skeletor, Skeletor lives to fight another day, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. I have, but you'll have to let me come at it from my outside perspective again.
Okay.
Something that I noticed, and again, this... It may be different for people who are deep in it, and literally, if you saw it at a certain age, it was enormously influential, right? We see again and again, people say He-Man was the first, you know, franchise that really hit me, and a lot of people, their lives were changed by it. Part of that is because Lou Scheimer at Filmation was very, very adamant about a positive role model. He wanted to build the positivity into that animated series. And I've talked to his daughter, Erica Scheimer, and she... Erica, right? Yeah, Erica. So too many names. She had told us that it was really important to him that parents would see something really positive, the kids would be, you know, inspired. So you see that moral aspect to it. And that's one thing that's really stayed throughout. You know, with Conan, it is a dark world. It's something that really appeals to a certain kind of person, and those people are generally not under grade 7, and you know what I mean? It's just not something that you want necessarily little kids to see, depending on how you raise your kid. I know some people that raise their kids to look on it from very young, and by the way, I'm one of those kids who likes Conan very young. Mm-hmm. But people want that, whatever. So here you have this character, He-Man, created by a group of people who are, when Summer comes in, he really puts a backbone of moral lessons. It doesn't sound nice when you say moral to me. There's a good aspect to all of the stuff that He-Man is doing. Second thing that I think we pull away is that it's aspirational. Kids love that transformation, right? It's turning from one character into a character of power. And, of course, the word power is mentioned in an average He-Man episode how many times, right? Yeah. Even in the opening of the show.
Right.
So that sense of power is important for kids. And not just boys, obviously. She-Ra is a powerful and important character as well. And you get this sense that, yeah, you're a little kid, and you feel like the world isn't really designed for you, per se. And you feel sometimes helpless or sad or scared or whatever, but here's a character who transforms into, there's nothing more obvious, like He-Man, like your character, Man-Man. I think I said that in the podcast. Man-Guy.
Yeah.
But it's good. And that idea, that maturation, that seeking power, and through the growing of strength comes this importance to be moral and to follow your code. And I like that element to it.
All right. Well, obviously, you're looking at, looks like, at a December 2017 release, depending on if the Kickstarter goes well. Looks like it's going well. It looks like it's going well. I know that you want to raise a minimum of $25,000. Anyone listening to the podcast right now, if they're kind of on the fence, what would you say to push them into supporting this?
Many people put into this, if they see we raised $25,000, that $25,000 really gets us started, we will be paying much, much more than that. It's very expensive to make a movie like this. There are expenses that are hard to imagine, not the least of which would be simply travel and just being a person and living as you make a movie.
Right. Yeah.
But when you're making a movie, you're not doing your day job. My day job is I'm a high school teacher. I take a leave of absence. We go make the movie. And when we sacrifice our day jobs, that's fine. We're happy to do that because we believe in what we're doing. We're passionate. But you can imagine that it's going to cost us far more in terms of money, far more than the 25. So if the people want to put that donation in to allow us to make that movie, that's one thing they'll realize. Nobody's getting rich off this. Nobody's making, it's not like we're pocketing a bunch of money and then going to make this crappy little movie. We're making a very professional, high-end documentary. Just, it will look indistinguishable from the most professional documentaries you see. And all the money that is spent will be up on the screen. So, I mean, it's a stereotype to say, but in our case, much more than is spent will be up on the screen. Second thing I'll say is, we know there's a He-Man reboot out there somewhere. In fact, there's news about it today. I believe McG is looking at the movie, which is, I think the producer's name is Devon Franklin, and that's at Sony. And if they're looking at McG, he's a very well-regarded director by many. He's done a lot of genre stuff, Shadowhunters, which I think came out in the last few days as a TV show. He directed the pilot, I believe. Don't quote me on that. But with that kind of, you know, Sony and McG, and they'll be looking for, I would assume, somebody pretty interesting to play He-Man, that kind of reboot means that we've got to be on our game even more, because we want Sony to care about it, right? We want Mattel to care about it. So it's not just the donations that make it important. It's the people caring about it so that they can let the big studios and the toy companies know, hey, these guys are out here. They're doing something about the franchise that we love. How can you keep your eyes on it, too? How, you know, the fans reach out to Sony, Sony might listen. The fans reach out to Mattel, Mattel might listen. This Kickstarter campaign is a way of getting the fans to care, to know about us, and to see us from the inside, in the process from the inside, right? They have stake in it then, too, so it's meaningful.
All right, well, if it's any bit as good as Turtle Power, then it's going to be great, because we absolutely loved it, and... Power of Grayskull, it's up on Kickstarter right now. You can find a link to it at deepcavepodcast.com. Randall, thank you for taking some time and talking through it with us, and we really look forward to seeing it.
Well, I thank you for having me, and I hope I didn't go too deep there. I know when you get into these franchises and you dig as much material up as we dig up, you end up, it's hard to just skim across the top, you know?
No, it was great, and you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thanks so much. I look forward to it. I'm always happy to talk to you guys.
And we want to thank Randall once again for coming by again, or calling, actually, because we put him in a box with a honey badger. That's unfortunate.
How is Fluffy?
Fluffy's fine. Fluffy's okay. Good.
That's the honey badger. I named it Fluffy.
Oh.
So I get to keep it now, right?
Yeah,
I don't know. It depends on if Kyrie kills it or not.
Oh, good point. Darren's cat's vicious.
She is. Yeah. Anyway, it's called Power of Grayskull. Once again, you can find the Kickstarter, a link to it, at our website, deepcavepodcast.com. It's already passed its goal. Just between the time we started talking to him and the time we wrapped up, it's passed its goal. So... plenty of time for you to go and support it. I'm looking forward to it because they did Turtle Power. Randall did Turtle Power, and Justin, you and I have both seen that. We loved it.
Yep.
So more of the same. Not bad at all.
Cool,
I got a couple of news bits while I've got the microphone.
Yes.
Real quick, Disney basically is never, ever, ever going to stop making Marvel and Star Wars movies.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
Anyway, Disney chairman Bob Iger.
Never gonna
Iger.
Stop producing Star Wars.
Says they'll keep pumping out movies about most of your favorite Marvel characters, or the exploits of a bunch of laser sword wielding super monks in a galaxy far, far away for as long as they possibly can. So, I don't know. I'm
to infinity and beyond, indeed.
Yeah. On one hand, that's great. On the other hand, that means no resolution of plot threads, really, because they're just going to keep the story going. And
when was the last time there was true resolution of a plot thread in a comic book? Anything?
Well, I was thinking of Star Wars, actually. But you're right. You're right. So that's the thing.
Well, now that Star Wars is a comic thing too,
It's a good comic too. But so that's going to be going on forever. Some good news, however, is Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy are reprising their roles from the DC animated universe, the Batman, all the way to the Justice League series.
Turns out retirement ain't all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed Mark Hamill's Batman. It was spectacular.
There's a certain edge to it.
Yes.
And let's be honest, Kevin Conroy brings a real darkness to the Joker.
Yes, he does. He almost plays it straight at times, but it works. It really was. It really does.
Playing the Joker straight is one of the few things that anyone's ever done.
That's true. It's always been, you know. Yes, Darren. Yes.
What?
You've got him flipped.
Oh, that's right. It's Mark Conroy and Kevin Hamilton.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry.
We'll fix it in post.
Yeah, fine.
And by we, I mean Darren.
Yeah. And by fix, you mean not. This new show is called Justice League Action. It's going to be... Now, Justin, I'm sorry. It's going to be like Teen Titans Go. It's going to run in installments of 11-minute episodes, and it'll be kind of humor-based, so...
Son of a bitch!
Yeah. The good news is James Woods will be voicing Lex Luthor.
So. What the hell?
I know. And Diedrich Bader, who voiced Batman in The Brave and the Bold, will be Booster Gold.
You know, the only way this could be better is if Adam West was going to voice Bruce Wayne.
But Kevin Conroy still voices Batman.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It is. They don't have a debut date for it just yet. Other than that, it's coming. It was just announced like right before we started taping. So that's a thing.
I don't know how to wrap my head around this because it's like I want to hear those people as those characters, but I don't want to watch them in an 11-minute goof off.
Well, then you're just going to have to avoid it.
Fine. I avoid Teen Titans Go like the plague. What's one more thing on my shit list?
You've got Luthor.
Oh.
And finally, another thing to avoid.
Man.
Finally, another thing to avoid. The DeLorean is back. It's
Are
back
they fixing
in production.
It?
Nope.
Exactly the same as it was, huh?
Yep.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yep. DeLorean Motors in Humble, Texas is going to put out 300 of the cars, and they're going to be identical to how they were.
Yeah, just see my reaction to Justice League Action and apply it to not fixing the DeLorean, because I don't feel like...
the DeLorean had a couple of good ideas.
Yeah, the doors.
Well, that's kind of the thing. The gullwing doors are actually a brilliant idea. They only require 14 inches in order to completely open, which means that you can have a jerk park next to you, and you still get in and out of your car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Oh, did I...
Fine.
Did I mention they're going to sell for around $100,000 each?
Damn.
I don't know that they're worth it.
Damn, Gina. So, yeah. That's all I got for movies. You're welcome.
Wow. I want to go back in time. Well, all right. So, Jared Hess, he's the director of Napoleon Dynamite. has been chosen to helm a Nicktoons movie that's supposed to be some kind of hybrid live action slash animated abomination, combining some of those cartoons of the 90s.
Except with
in some way, except for Doug, because that's owned by a different group now. The shows that have been mentioned so far are Rugrats, Ren and Stimpy, because I love to see those two cartoons run together.
Yep.
Rocko's Modern Life, Real Monsters, and The Angry Beavers.
Yes.
So the likelihood of this being anything other than terrible are about as good as Napoleon Dynamite being chosen for the Library of Congress's National Film Registry.
By the way, Ghostbusters was chosen for
was
that.
It?
Yes.
Good.
It will be permanently preserved.
Nice. So Jerry Bruckheimer tweeted on January 26th, quote, "Just got back from a weekend in New Orleans to see my old friend at Tom Cruise to discuss a little Top Gun 2, end quote. And we're just going to go ahead and file this in sequels that are ill-advised and should not happen. It can go right here on top of Blade Runner 2 and Labyrinth 2, which is also becoming a thing. The writer, one of the Perlmans, I think Nicole Perlman, she's saying that it is neither a reboot nor a remake, but a continuation of the story. It's kind of like making a theater joke to Abraham Lincoln's Widow. It's just a little soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, speaking of things that are not happening too soon, but in fact have been a long
unless,
time coming.
Unless, like Alan Rickman, David Bowie secretly filmed Labyrinth 2 while he was still healthy and could. And it's just been waiting.
Wow. So,
I have hope now.
You guys know that I like watching old movies. I like watching all kinds of things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the movies that I enjoyed watching was Metropolis. It's a German silent film that they're not entirely certain that the version that's available now is actually the real version. Because a lot of pieces and parts of it were destroyed or were damaged or lost across time. And it's been put together about as best as it could be. The same is true of the original Nosferatu movie.
Yeah.
Well, in 1927, in France, a film was made about the life and early career of Napoleon Bonaparte. It was about 5 hours long and was subsequently lost to the sands of time until a man named Kevin Brownlow, after 60 years of searching and working, has spliced together through film archives and partial prints the whole movie and has put it back together.
Wow.
That's dedication.
And so the movie's going to be made available on DVD. The British Film Institute's going to air it in cinemas for this autumn. And for a special treat, if you can find it, and I don't know exactly where it'll be. I'm guessing probably Philadelphia, possibly California, because it just mentions Philharmonic, but there's a lot of different Philharmonics.
Yeah.
You can go and see this movie with a live orchestra playing the soundtrack.
Wow.
So if you've ever wanted to go to a 5 hour long concert with a film playing, this is certainly a chance. It hasn't been done like that probably since 1927.
Damn.
And even most of those in the not big city theaters, it would have just been somebody on a piano.
Yeah.
Or a hurdy-gurdy or Anyway.
Darren has this blank expression when you said hurdy-gurdy. He's like, what?
It's a kind of organ.
No, I got it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's your normal expression. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So this is not to be confused with the terrible, horror movies, Trolls and Trolls 2.
Yes.
But there is a cartoon that is about to come out this November called Trolls. After those little dolls with the gem in their belly and the tall hair.
Yeah.
Isn't it like a decade or so too late for that?
Well, I don't think so, because 90s kids will support anything that's nostalgic.
This
Look
is true.
At Michael Bay's career. So,
not too closely, it'll make your nose bleed, but yeah, just kind of glance at it.
So I watched the preview today.
Sadly, so did I.
Yeah. I was turned off by Salento's whip and nene being used in
the
trailer.
I'm not even sure what a nene is.
I'm not entirely certain either, but I know that I've heard it a lot and it annoys me. I was then further turned off, oddly enough, when they switched out Whip and Nene to the 69 Boys singing Tootsie Roll. And after watching the trailer, which Darren will put on the cave because he's obligated to do so by my reporting this story.
Son of
it's a... It's true.
Justin and I have decided to not go and see it.
Mm-hmm.
So feel free to not see it with us. Instead, you can come and see Doctor Strange with us, or you can come
with Benedict Cumberbun.
Yes. Or you can come see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Or you can see the Disney film, Moana, which has the advantage of Dwayne Johnson voicing a Polynesian demigod. You know,
I can smell what he's cooking.
These are all better choices right now than Trolls. And I don't want to be proven right or wrong about this. I'm just going to avoid it.
Yes.
So, one of my favorite kung fu movies in recent past has been the Ip Man movies with Donnie Yen. And Ip Man 3 has been released just recently. And it's the continuing story of the man who taught Bruce Lee. Now, this is supposedly the last one that Donnie Yen's going to be doing, and he said it's his last kung fu movie, but Crouching Tiger,
yeah.
Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah, part two is supposed to be coming out, and he's in that, so. Mm. Anyway, it's better than the second one, not as good as the first one. You know? But I'm liking it, too. You know how in Bruce Campbell versus the Army of Darkness, mm-hmm. they got rid of almost all the horror shtick in favor of the comedy?
Yeah.
Well, in the first movie, the Ip Man was invincible. I mean, even in the final battle, he was pretty much, you know, he won without really breaking a sweat. And in the second movie, he was invincible until that last fight, which was stupid. This movie, they went back to that. And just kind of realized, like, yeah, he's older now, but he's still unbeatable, so we're just going to run with it. The fighting is beautifully choreographed. It's well done. It is a worthy end to the trilogy. Hmm. Jessica Jones is getting a season two, because of course it did.
Of course.
Jessica Jones was really good. Daredevil season two is coming in March. Because I don't have enough coming out in March to occupy my time. Thank you, Warner Brothers. Hmm. Thank you, Jesus. Yeah. Easter's on the 27th for those of you. Which means that Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice is coming out on Black Friday. Good Friday.
Good Friday, yeah.
It'll be a Black Friday for me. I gotta work.
Do I work? Do I go see Batfleck? Choices.
I probably better work. So, and last,
I'll go see it for you.
Thank you. So, last bit for me, I saw The Revenant this past month. I told you that I'm taking a break from the random movie reviews. I'm going to try and see a movie that's actually been in theaters, mm-hmm. at least one a month, and trying to. And so I saw The Revenant because I figured just about everybody and their sister saw Star Wars. Tom and Darren did such a magnificent job of reviewing that. I don't need to.
No.
I don't need to review that one. So I saw The Revenant. And I realize that it, for those of you who are listening, it's been out for a while now. But here's my take. The movie is gorgeous. And I mean, seriously, you will not find prettier camera work outside of a BBC nature documentary.
Ooh.
Or a Louis Schwartz moving art film. I mean, it's just, it is absolutely stunning. Iñárritu, the director, he insisted on only using natural light. He was in the wilderness of Canada, so I mean, he wasn't getting a lot of light per day. But what he was getting, he was able to make a very natural, very realistic, and beautiful world that he was filming. So the acting is above board. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy, they knock it out of the park. Through the whole movie, I believed in Tom Hardy's frustration, his anger, his sense of superiority. You know, I absolutely believed Leonardo DiCaprio's anger, his desire for vengeance. What I didn't get was the story. I mean, the story is a pretty simple one. It's a guy is attacked by a bear. He's eventually left for dead. He doesn't die. And so he seeks vengeance on the ones who killed his son and left him for dead. The focus of the story, the camera work, that part is all focused on the survival. It's all on him, the choices he makes on how to survive, what he eats, how he moves, how he survives. But all the energy, all the stuff that happens, all the real... energy is the right word here. All of the energy that they put into the story is all based on the revenge. And so there's this dissonance in the film itself. You're wanting him to get to the revenge part because then there's something happening. You're excited about that. It's intense. But then you spend about 2 hours watching him crawl across the wilderness of Canada. Or you watch him float down a river. Or you watch him... bleed, in a makeshift lean-to that somebody is making for him during a blizzard. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate for all of its accolades, and there are a lot of accolades that this movie certainly deserves from its acting, from its camera work standpoint. It's a disappointing follow-up to Birdman, which was what Iñárritu's first piece was, what's his name?
Michael Keaton.
Yes, the Michael Keaton flick. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I'm glad that I saw it. You know, I think that it was a good enough movie, but it's probably one that will be just as good watching on Blu-ray, at home, on your own when you can pause it, go to the bathroom, get a drink. Because at 2 hours and I think 26 minutes... There are parts of it that are certainly a slog. So,
all right,
that's what I got.
All right,
next month I hope to be able to review Deadpool.
I hope so too. That should be fun. Justin, you got anything?
Chimichangas for everyone. no, I've seen movies. I've watched film in one capacity or another, both live action and animation. So. No, I'm good.
All right. Good feedback. Good perspective there.
Anytime. Always happy to help. I'm the funny one.
He's the funny one. Well, again, we want to thank Randall Lobb for calling us and letting us talk about Power of Grayskull. That looks like it's going to be a fun movie. And, of course, thanks to BuzzTime for the prize pack. Thanks to our other sponsors, Shirtosaurus and GameStop. And thanks to you for finding us, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher or GeekTapePodcast.com or our social media segments, whether it's Twitter or Facebook. So be sure to check back with us.
He suddenly became a PBS kid show. And viewers like you.
And viewers, yeah.
Thanks.
Next thing you know, he'll be selling us to HBO.
Today's Geek Cave is brought to you by the letters F and U.
For fun. All right.
Fun.
For Chad, Justin, and Kent, I'm Darren. Thanks a lot for listening. Remember, everyone's a geek for something.